Welcome to Holden Village. Today, in the incredible Creekside Room, today's speaker is Julia Pashaud, and she'll be speaking on Put Down Your Dukes. So let's listen in on Julia Pashaud.
The first thing, though, that I'd like to do is talk about how conflict is framed culturally so that you get a fix on how I'm steering my thinking and how I'm reflecting that and what we'll do today. Think about how it is that you approach conflict and frame conflict. I'm going to move this down here. Traditionally, in your life, I'm sure you know all the people who avoid conflict and or run to it and get both of their hands up. Therefore, come on in, look. Therefore, if you know the whole thing about putting up your dukes, all right, you want to fight, let's fight. Traditionally, that's called fight or flight. And I'm real interested in, in this idea of fight or flight as a model. I think it's an inherently competitive model, and I think it's encouraged in culture, and I'm interested in reframing that model. Just for example, think of the last time that you had a conversation with someone. Were you interrupted? Did somebody try to top you? Have you ever been in a conversation where someone's interrupted you or tried to top you or has competed for their idea to be on the table? Think about group discussions where somebody's always going, and sort of voicing over what you have to say. Or even in family discussions or discussions with friends. It can be simply a matter of a friendly sort of repartee, but what happens is that somebody gets silenced in the process. That's a competitive model at work, and it can be very passive seeming. It can be very in the most friendly circumstance, but yet it's based on someone trying to win or have power over someone else.
Sometimes that happens to me, and I'm not a quiet person, but especially with men, not my husband, but with men, it'll be a group discussion. I'll start to say something, and somebody just comes right in as if I'm not even talking. Mm-hmm. Is that competition, or is that just not hearing?
Oh, that's competition. That's also not being accustomed to hearing your voice. I think traditionally in culture, research has demonstrated that we are enculturated to accept a male voice as a voice of authority. If you listen to newscasts, quite typically, even the female newscasters often have a more powerful, more traditionally male-sounding voice in some ways, even though they are women. But women are not seen as the power brokers, and so they are often not heard. And it's not that people are trying to marginalize you, but it's just simply that that's enculturated. If you were given a survey, many of you would be probably, if you heard several voices, many of you would probably pick the male voice as the one that was more authoritative, just by habit. It's an enculturated custom in our society. Well, talking about competitive culture, one of the key elements that comes out in competition is the thinking that frames it. And traditionally, this thinking is bipolar. And when I say bipolar, I mean that there are two oppositional elements at each end of the spectrum. Okay, and bipolar thinking has to do with a dual split thought. They're complete and utter opposites. The reason that this is an important concept is because bipolar thinking is, by its very nature, exclusionary thinking. Because we have two separate categories that cannot equal each other, there is no middle ground. For example, an example of categories, black and white. I'm sure you can help me out here. Yes, no?
Right,
correct.
Conservative, liberal.
Conservative and liberal, yeah. And of course, the big one, win and lose. Okay? With bipolar or binary thinking, there is no middle ground. Okay? The opposite of of bipolar thinking is an analogous type of thinking. This is known as either or. Analogous thinking has to do with both and thinking. It has to do with an allotment for a middle ground in terms of categories, all right? We're not going to spend too much time in this idea, but instead we're going to try and literalize it much more and talk about the idea of collaboration as reflective of analogous thinking. To frame this then in terms of conflict, I'd like you to think of the traditional bipolar categories of us and them. Say you're in conflict with somebody, and you have your idea, and they have their idea, and you are asked to resolve a conflict. Let's say, for example, you're negotiating with your neighbors over a small easement, okay? And if you are involved in a competitive model, what happens is that they consider you opposite of them. And they say, okay, I've got my idea. This is how we're going to resolve it. And then you say, well, I've got my idea. This is how we're going to resolve it. And what happens in this bipolar example is that, okay, I'll take this piece and this piece and, well, and then we take all of these little pieces and we patch them together in what we call a solution or a compromise, in which neither of us win because we don't feel as though we've been hurt. How many of you have ever been in a situation where you're negotiating with somebody and say, okay, I'll do this, but you have to give up this, okay? What has happened is that I believe that my resolution is a whole idea. I think of it as a whole thing, and anything less than the whole thing, because it's an exclusive category, it does not include you, is less than satisfactory. It is not a full thing. I'm not going to be satisfied. This is a win-lose situation. Well, how do we turn it into a win-win situation? We talk about being inclusive, all right? Wherein I come to the table and you come to the table, not with the solution, but with the skills to deal with naming and identifying the problem. If we can identify the problem and set our goals together, what happens is, in our coming together, we create something new that neither of us expected or anticipated, which is satisfactory to both of us because we both had a say in its creation. We set the ground rules and we identified what it was that we wanted to do. Therefore, we don't lose anything. It's not a diminishing or stripping away. It's a building and generating and creationary act, conflict resolution. Conflict also, I don't think, is as bad as it's often framed in this culture. When you talk about conflict in a competitive culture, quite often you talk about this idea that I'm going to lose or I'm going to win, okay? That it's something that it's very confrontive, it's an engagement that's negative. Well, conflict is natural. Look at how many people there are in this room. There are 10, 12 of us, 13 of us in this room. And we all have different value sets. We all have different experiences. We all come to the table, so to speak, with a whole range of life experience that is unique from everyone in this room. That's going to shape our needs very differently, all very differently. So what's going to happen is that if we haven't thought about conflict in a way other than competitive, we're going to bump up against each other. Okay? If we begin to frame conflict as something that's natural, people rub up against each other all the time and create sparks. It's kind of like atoms colliding. We're going to do a little action there. The energy's going to move. And it's a matter of saying, okay, this is a natural thing to have conflicting needs. The idea then is to, in the rubbing up against each other, deal with that in a positive and proactive way. There's a couple of communication assumptions that I often teach my students in communication classes. One thing that I do in my teaching in South Dakota is teach basic communication skills like public speaking, interpersonal communication. And there are two that I start the class out with. And the first one is that, let's see, what are they, Julie? I have to think about how to frame them correctly. Oh. I have a corner of the universe. and it's the correct one. Okay? And the second one is, you have the same one. Okay? My corner of the universe is the right one. It's the same as everyone else's. Obviously, it's a fallacy, but if you think about how many people you've rubbed up against, and you just start talking, and then suddenly you realize, oh, we're very, very different. There's this moment of rupture, isn't there? Where it's like, we're having a great conversation, and then suddenly we hit on something like politics, or sexuality, or religion, and suddenly we go, and you can feel the room start to sort of shift, and suddenly we kind of go, okay? That's very normal, but unfortunately, most of us kind of walk in with this sort of belief system, and it makes it very difficult to kind of embrace difference. And there is a lot of difference in the universe. Well, what we're going to do today is we're going to develop some skills through improvisation. It's one of the things I teach. And you'll all be getting up, so don't be shy. And then we're going to talk about actually applying these skills that you've developed in conflict situations, and I'll be giving you some communication models to go away with. This is useful particularly in personal situations, if you're in an interpersonal conflict. It's also useful if you're in the position of dealing with a large group of people, because it gives you a way of rethinking and reshaping conflict with that group. Well, let's get up then, shall we? We're going to get some action going. And what I'd like to do is just stand up if you could, everybody. This room's a little tight, but it's okay. I'd like you to stretch up, please. Ah! And reach with your right and with your left. If it didn't know you were in body recall. And both hands. Press out. Ah, and sweep the waist. Bend your arms just a little bit. Don't elbow anybody or really have a problem. It's a test. Okay? And let's do it. Let's start. Ready? Do it again. And ready? Feel all loose. Yeah. Okay. We're running a game called Word Chase, and it's basically just a game where we tell a story, but you do not anticipate where the story's going. You just say a word after the one said before. And I'll write it down because it's often a lot of fun to hear what a mess you make. Doesn't make any sense, but it's fine. I'll begin. There.
Yes.
Nothing. Going. Green.
And. Blue.
Sky. Beyond.
Reach.
Can.
Be.
Happy.
Without.
Knowledge.
We keep going?
Or? Yeah.
Oh.
Four. Is it supposed to be a sentence?
It makes a sentence.
Within. Laughter. Rainbows.
Rainfall.
What'd you say?
Forest.
Rainfall.
Forest.
Grove.
Death.
Mildew.
Pecans. You can find out the one in Belgium with pecans.
Brazil.
Besides.
Running.
Hot.
Milkshake.
Dancing.
Wait.
Circles.
Okay.
Up.
What'd you say?
Up.
Okay.
Mountain.
Flying.
Sentences.
Sentences.
Add some verbs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are.
What was your word? Flying.
Is.
Ridiculous.
I think we'll end there. Good. Okay. What you've written is, there is nothing going green on the sky beyond reach. Can be happy without knowledge or within laughter. Rainbows, rainfall, forest growth, death. mildew, pecans, Brazil, besides running hot afternoon.
Milkshake.
Dancing circles up mountain, flying is ridiculous. One of the reasons I like this little exercise is that it's, you may sit. It's a useful exercise in that it allows you to not predispose yourself to setting an ending. You just have to go with where the group is going. And wherever the group goes is okay, but you cannot dictate the results. There is no way in this exercise to plan ahead. Quite often in conflict, what happens is that you plan ahead. You come in with what's known as an agenda. And that agenda, at some level, is your rock upon which you stand. Unfortunately, I think of agendas as shifting sand. And you really can't stand upon them. You can't build upon them because they do not, they shift all the time because you're dealing with people. You're not dealing with rocks and stones. You're dealing with human beings who have wants and needs and that rub up against each other. So I like this exercise, and it's a good one to start with, by the way, because it gets people loosened up a little bit. And people may think, what? What do you want to do, play a game? Yes, I want to play a game because I want to loosen you up just a little bit. Now, conflict is about solving problems, isn't it? It's not about rhetoric. It's not about talk. Unfortunately, most people make it about talk. I think improvisation is a good analogy because improvisation is fundamentally about people in a conflict getting what they want. It's about being active. It's not about talking. If you've ever watched people in an improvisational thing, in an improvisational setting, and they start talking, like I'll say, could you give me that glass? And he says, well, no, I can't give you that glass today because I'm feeling rather ill. Oh, what happened? Oh, I fell down and I scraped my knee. Well, suddenly it's rhetoric. Suddenly we're not solving a problem anymore. We're talking about his knee, and the audience is going, that's nice. What time is it? Where are we going to dinner? Okay. You don't engage the audience at all. And it's true in conflict. You don't engage your audience, which is all of you in the resolution process. You're all going, oh, yeah, blow some more steam. Okay, what time's the break? Okay. So it's about being active and going towards resolution. There are a couple of ground rules in conflict resolution and improvisation. And I'll just write them down and then I'll explain them. If you can read my icky writing.
What's your first word?
Offers.
Offers.
That you can't refuse, in fact. A lot of this stuff, if any of you are teachers, I recommend a book to you called Impro by Kenneth Johnstone. It's an excellent book about improvisation, but also about education, the whole process of educating individuals. Johnston was a school child who hated school. And he was a bright, bright young man, but he basically blew off most of his year, became a delinquent until he discovered theater. Because theater gave him a hook in the educational system, and he's brilliant. And I would recommend his book. Okay, Johnstone first says that improvisation is based on the offer. An offer can be anything. It can be a suggestion, it can be an action, it can be a word. As I said, would you give me that cup? Is an offer. Because I've made an opening. It's like opening a door. When I say I want to work on this problem with you, that's an offer. Okay? The second basic tenet of offers is that they do not refuse them. You should accept them. Okay? Can I have that cup?
Yes.
He accepted. Oh, I don't know what's in that. Okay? And said, no, that's fine. Oh, it's warm. Oh, it's warm. I want it. No. And I gave him an offer. I don't want what's... Well, have you got another cup? Okay. I gave him another offer back. And that's the point of offering and accepting, is that it makes us go somewhere. It's very active. The third tenet, mindfulness. It's about being present to the here and now of the situation. If you have an agenda and in the back of your mind, out front you're going, yes, those are good ideas. And then in the back of your mind you're going, now how can I steer him to get to my land rights, okay? You're not being present to the situation because the situation is going to take you somewhere. Mindfulness is about being here and now. In acting, you can't be anywhere else because it's about being in a body. It's about being with somebody else in a situation. So mindfulness is the third tenet. The fourth tenet is sharing versus competing. Everybody, you know, we always hear about somebody wanting to be the star. Have you ever been in a conversation or in a resolution process and somebody just always wants to get their two cents in all the time? That person is being a star and not sharing. In improvisation, it's extremely important that you share, that you go back and forth, and that we make ground rules to do that, and the same can be said for conflict. You can make and set ground rules. One good ground rule in conflict resolution is no interrupting. Interruptions are a sign of competition. In Norway, in public sessions, I have a student who was Norwegian, and she would say that when somebody was raising an idea and everybody who wanted to talk about that idea would raise one finger. And then when all of the ones had gone away, then the twos came up, which were the second idea that had nothing to do with the first or were, you know, springboards off of that. How many of you have been in meetings where you're doing this because you don't know which answer you're, you know, question you're answering? Okay, so we don't compete. We try and help each other and we share. A good ground rule is then we're going to come into this conflict and the first rule is that people finish their ideas and we don't interrupt them. Okay, and then you raise your finger or you write, you make a note to yourself to raise your point and then you just let people know that you need to speak. But that person finishes their thought. Because when you interrupt, you basically silence the other person and you basically say, I don't need to hear what you have to say. Okay, and that is very competitive. Fifth rule, saving and cooperation. Have you ever been on, how many of you have ever been on stage when things were just going miserably? Or you were giving a speech or you were in front of a crowd? How many of you have ever gone through something like that? Okay, teaching? Any teachers here that's just like, miserable day, miserable day. I think I'm going to go to the nunnery now. All right, saving and cooperation has to do with when you see somebody flailing, you help them out. Okay, if I'm up here going, I, somebody else comes in and helps me out. It's true in conflict as well. If you see someone flailing, you identify, you say, I see you're having a hard time here. What are you really after? You don't let them sink and fall and feel like they're isolated. You try and give them support and acceptance in trying to share their ideas. Particularly in conflict resolution, their gender differences become very marked because women and men, not all, and this is a generalization, mind you, and this is an Anglo-Saxon generalization, but women and men in Anglo culture have been enculturated to respond to conflict very differently, and quite often, I find that women have a harder time putting forth ideas, and so it becomes very important when someone is tenuous about putting forth their idea to give them support. Okay, so those are the basic ground rules. We're going to play a couple of games, and I know you're going to like this because it's fun. And I encourage you to remember the rules. Everybody gets to play. There are no non-participants because...
Why? Because we're cooperative. We're not competitive.
All right, that's for posterity. This game is called Who, and it's basically a very simple little game. It's about identifying the relationship between the two people on stage. And improvisation, you need to know, is about individuals, knowing who you are, in a situation, knowing your context, who want to achieve something, knowing what you want, your objective. In Who, there are two players, and I need an individual, anybody, because we're going to go around the group and you're all going to do it. Come on down, honey. Yes, let's give her a hand and we'll play Who. Honey, where are you from?
I'm from Louisiana.
Thank you. I'll give her a prize. All right, she is going to be the person who does, she's A. Okay, A does not know what the context is or the relationship. It is up to B to make it clear to A what the relationship is. For those of you who are bees, and you will all be bees, it's important to remember two things. Pick a relationship that's clear. Pick something that is active, where you can do something to this person. You can be in a profession, say for example, I am a nurse and she is a patient. What could I do to demonstrate to her what our relationship is?
Give her a shot.
Give her a shot, okay, very good. If I say I'm a photographer and she is my model, what could I do to clarify our relationship? Take her picture. Here's the hitch with who. I like that. Here's the hitch with who. You cannot speak. You can only demonstrate through activity your relationship. All of improvisation is about solving a problem, about solving a problem. And so when she knows what the problem is, she will solve it by speaking in character. So, for example, if I come in and I go, the offer means accepting it with vigor, so she might go, what do you want from me now, subject? Okay, you can play with this, it's fine. Okay, but usually occupations are a good way to develop something that's active. It's awfully hard to come in and go, you know, talking doesn't work or mouthing doesn't work. Do something that's active, all right? Just think of a profession. It could be a checker, it could be a waitress, it could be a dishwasher, something that's very active. It could be a nurse plumping pillows, okay? If I'm sitting, say I'm sitting in the chair and you want to plump my pillows, maybe you'll lean me back, you know? Okay.
Nurse, could you please get me some water?
Okay, or you might be a dentist. Dentists are great because that's always Now, the second thing is, if somebody else does it before you, so what? Uniqueness doesn't count here. It's about being authentic. If you're playing the game, you're just getting into it. And so if you do the same thing she's done, and she come before you, there's no ownership, there's no copyright on playing. Look at what kids do. They play all the time, over and over and over again. They play the same thing over and over and over. They don't care that they played it 2 minutes before because there's no copyright, okay? Same is true for you folks. There's no copyright on conflict resolution because they're going to keep happening and there's no copyright on this game. You get to be B now, and you get to be A. I'm too excited. Watch what she's doing. And if you think you've got a clear idea, you just go for it and start talking.
I think I'm building lumber, stacking lumber.
Okay, was that what you're doing? Well, then you need to respond in character. If you're carrying something for her, you know, it's like, I don't want my lunch, I hate this job. I hate this job. How many pieces have we stacked today? And then she would respond in kind. Okay, it's your turn. Oh, go for it, Jan. Oh, you're up.
Well, I think I'll have today's how much is today's special?
That is
close enough.
Now, he did some, I believe you were a librarian.
Yeah.
Yes. You need to pay attention to the small clues. He went,
oh.
And then what if she says, I'll have this today's special, you could either shift and say,
lady, it's a library. Yeah.
Or you can become a waiter. You can accept her offer.
Yeah.
Okay? It doesn't matter either way. Your turn to be B, and you are A. Nice. Nice job, nice job. Let's have a round of applause for us. Really good. As soon as you know, talk to her.
I do not want my hair that short. It looks really bad.
Good.
I'm sorry, lady, but I can't put it back on again.
Good.
I refuse to pay for this.
No, good. Good solving of the problem. Good acceptance on both of your parts. Next. You're the. How much is the fare?
$1, please.
Good. I think they're watching a video. Let's snap.
Well, it depends what we're playing.
Ideation. Identify your problem on your own. What is the problem fundamentally? You may say, you're leaving the toilet seat lid up. The problem may be that you haven't negotiated household manners. Maybe you haven't taken out the trash in 6 weeks and your partner says, you haven't taken out the trash, that is a real problem! When really the problem is you have not worked together to define what the household responsibilities are. So identify what the problem is and don't confuse it with the presenting concern. The presenting concern is the behavior. And remember, it's always in the behavior, it's not in the person. Identify the behavior that is problematic. You're killing people on our border. That's a problem, okay? So identify the problem by yourself. Get together and together define the goal of this solution resolution process. We come into this situation, I have my own identification, you have yours. We need to together, first of all, define what our goal is. Okay, yeah, I'm leaving the garbage out, but the cat boxes never get done. Okay, what really is the problem here? The problem is that we need to reassess our household task division. What's our goal here? To develop a household task division, or handling of money, or resolving a conflict within the church body, or resolving a conflict at work. What really is the problem? Joe comes into work every day late. And Joe says, okay, I'll do it better. I said, no, Joe, that's not the issue here. We need to get together to come to some kind of a solution because your lateness affects everyone in the organization. It really is about the group and how the group functions together. Then, once we know what our goal is, we brainstorm solutions. Well, how can we solve this problem based upon what we agree is our goal? Then we come to realization. What happens is most people jump right away to this. They say, okay, yeah, I'm leaving the toilet seat lit up, I'll put it down, fine. And sometimes it is that simple, but quite often it is not. So we select one solution or two solutions that we can implement. We don't make our goal too large. We're going to change the world. Okay, let's do it. No, we say, okay, we're going to pick something that we can implement. Then we choose a plan and we put it into action. We make a plan. And then we give it time. This is where you have a break in the action. You give it some time to kind of look at how it's working. Give yourself a month, 6 weeks, 2 months. Don't rush it. And then evaluate. If the evaluation is that it's not working, you go back to there. But you don't just give up on the process, you give it some time, because in a collaborative environment where we have room to maneuver and shift against each other, we say, I'm going to give you some belief. I'm going to put some faith in you. Fundamentally, that's the first rule. Put faith in other people that they're doing their best at any time. When I teach interpersonal communication, I always say the first rule of thumb in conflict is that people are doing the best with what they have. They're not out to get you. Okay? If you're working in a collaborative environment, you assume that people are doing the best they can with what they've got. Maybe what they've got isn't as much as what it could be. And I think that's where people confuse the issue. maybe you've always fought, and I'm just sort of a you, but maybe you've always learned that you just duke it out. And I'm at a different stage in conflict resolution. I'm a person who says, we talk. And so you immediately come in with your dukes up. You're doing the best you can, but you can only move so far at a time. I have to accept that that's what you can give me, and then we work within that, that constraint. But you have to give it some time within a collaborative environment. You always give it some time and some belief and faith. Finally, some communication skills that may help you in the process. Listening and language use. There's just a couple of thoughts on these. We spend about 70% of our time in communication in a listening posture. 70%. You do listening more than anything else. Now, listening is not to be confused with hearing. Hearing is the collection of stimulus, the acceptance of stimulus. Listening is the processing and understanding of information. Active listening is a tacit agreement that you are going to pay attention. You're going to attend to the other person. There are some postures that you can take on as a listener. The first one is to develop eye contact. You know, depending upon the culture, in this culture, eye contact is assumed to be a good thing. Deal with the culture that you're in, but eye contact if it's necessary, a leaning forward posture. Sometimes it depends on the person, but a blocking posture in the body will be considered to be a hiding posture, so be thinking about how it is that you cover your body. What is your nonverbal communication saying? Affirmation behaviors. Maybe shaking the head. Or just agreeing to listen, just agreeing to be there fully in the moment. The second thought, communication behaviors with language, something called concreteness is very good. Again, behavior, not people. Quite often we jump to the judgment part of our communication. You are so dumb, okay? Or, you know, the parent says to the child, well, aren't you a smart kid? Meaning, you failed another test, I see. I feel as though you're not trying, therefore I think that you do not care about your education, as opposed to, well, that was good, you failed another test, dummy. Okay, I don't know a lot of parents in my circle who say stuff like that, fortunately, thank you God. But, again, it comes down to what do you see happening? What is the behavior that's problematic? Point to the behavior. Point to the feelings that the behavior creates in you. When you drop your shoes in the middle of the floor, I feel like a maid, and I think you do not care about our house and are relying on me to take care of everything. Okay, I'm still mad, and you can admit to your anger. You can say, I am angry about this. There's also another good one for interpersonal conflict. My husband and I always use this one. Okay, I love you, and this has happened. The I love you always sort of diffuses the situation. Make your feelings explicit, that person is of value to you. Look, you're my colleague and I care about you, and we have a problem. No buts. Buts are a sign of bipolar thinking. It's an automatic rejection. And there is an issue here that we need to resolve together if you're willing. Okay? So, point to the behavior. Try and be concrete with your feedback. Try and be explicit. It's not just, the house is always a mess. It's that I come home and there are dishes all over from 2 days before. Be explicit. Don't generalize, don't encompass. You're always doing this. And the last thought, ownership. And then we will be done. This is a big one to close on, but it's an important one. Ownership. Take that. Ownership implies taking responsibility for your feelings and thoughts in communication. The big tag in ownership is to me. You do not rely on everyone else's corner of the universe to explain it for you. You do not rely on brain mind reading. You rely upon your willingness to express your dissatisfaction or anger. If I'm angry with my husband, it's taken me a long time, but now I'll go, you know, I'm angry. And I don't die, I don't blow up, you know? It's okay to sort of point to it. To me, this is a problem, okay? Owning your feelings is the first fundamental rule of any communication situation. They're your feelings, they're not everybody else's. To me, the big one. That is all I have for today. I think. Do you have any questions? I hope that, this is sort of, and what is the meaning of life? The tag. just a final thought on my part. I do hope that you can see the tie between the theater work and the conflict resolution. They're very useful skills to develop, the being able to be in the moment that is given to you. I mean, people come into a conflict context from many different points, and it's very important to accept that they're going to be where they're at. My suggestion to you is to always create a space around your conflict. There's always the suggestion that if you're going to go into a conflict, you schedule an appointment, or you say, look, I can't talk right now, but could I have time with you later this afternoon? You make a point to make a buffered space where you can then...